Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the show on the road this week. We're looking forward to that because the Orioles are going to keep us up late early in the week and then get back home this weekend against the AAA team somewhere out there in Sacramento or wherever they're playing these days. We're going to have some fun this week talking some Oakland A's. We're also going to talk some horse racing and the horse racing industry with my pal David Richardson and a whole cadre of folks, but maybe not cadre Ishmael. We're going to be up at the Greenmount Bowl. We're going to have these Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. We're going to watch the Orioles and the Angels in the afternoon on Wednesday after we hang out for a couple hours, and we're going to have our conversations at the Greenmount Bowl. Once he started putting my 25th anniversary documentary like on the scoreboard inside Greenmount Bowl, I'm there for that. I'll find out whether Luke is a 10-pin or duck pin in a moment. On Friday, we'll be at Fadley's from 2 until 5 live. Yes, it rhymes. Luke will be there, and the Oakland Athletics will be there. You know, I miss going down and having a press credential back in 1992 and 93 when the Bash Brothers would come in and Canseco would come in here and muscle up and Carney Lansford would be hanging on. Be a little different here this week. We got baseball on the brain because these guys are pretty good. Are they not, Luke Jones? This is the one you've been waiting for. My documentary comes out on Thursday about all this and that and all this. 15 years ago, you walked into my life waiting for this baseball team.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been all bad, but certainly when you have a team that is as young, as talented, as promising off the field in terms of what could come with new ownership, I mean, I've said it over and over. I'll continue to say it. It's a great time to be an Orioles fan. There's no question about it. And even the weekend in Kansas City, where Friday night it starts out in less than promising fashion, and Adley Rutschman grand slam aside, nothing to write home about on Friday night. And you see Cole Reagans is going on Saturday and Seth Lugo is going on Sunday. Winning a series looking daunting. And as I said to you before this series, as I said to you, even when the Royals came into town in Baltimore, Royals are much better than they were a year ago. I think that's evident at this point. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs, but I think you see a team that has much more promise, even if they still have some roster holes. So,
you know what? On Friday night, I found myself out with Rob Fahey and Keith Brewer up at Big Falls Inn having a beer, and people were so nice to me and my wife. And they were all wearing Oriole gear or Raven gear, and they came up. They wanted to talk rock and roll, and I'm just getting off the yoga mat trying to get a beer in me and watch. And I got into a conversation with someone. He's like, he said, the Royals are good. Why do you think that is? And I'm like, the minute Rutschman got here, things turned around. They've got a special player. They've got an Ernie Banks, right? And I think it builds from that. And it happens, as we saw here, really quickly. They haven't caught on in Kansas City. The place looked empty all weekend. I'm like, y'all might have a decent team by September, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think they're pretty decent right now. Now, is that going to equate to a playoff spot and all of that? We'll have to see. Again, I think it's important not to jump to too many conclusions in April, whether you're talking about a good team or a bad team, quite frankly. But
well, you mentioned a starter on Saturday we didn't want to see, right? I mean, they have that. We didn't really have that last year.
Well, Orioles had that last year. Kyle Bradish was great. Grayson Rodriguez's second half of the season was great. But until it starts happening, you don't know. One thing Kansas City had done, though, was they added some veteran starting pitching and Seth Lugo being part of that, even though it didn't turn out too well for him on Sunday. But for the Orioles, you know, it didn't look great Friday night. Whenever you lose the first game of a series, obviously it's much more difficult to win a series. You know, that's just simple math and probability. But
they got clubbed on Friday night too, right? I mean, they're not going to lose big and bad that much where you're going to come in the fifth inning and say, what? You know, they're better than that. Most nights it's the other way around. Most nights it's they're winning 7-0.
Yeah. I mean, it's baseball. I mean, that's going to happen. So the fact that they jumped all over Cole Reagans the way they did on Saturday early, and then doing what they did on Sunday where it came together, the pitching, which Dean Kramer and even Corbin Burnes on Saturday, you know, didn't get through six innings. Cole Irvin gave them exactly what they needed on Sunday. After a couple long, not so impressive nights from the bullpen, Cole Irvin gave them probably his best start as an Oriole, quite frankly, which I know the bar hasn't been overly high, but the guy that we saw on Sunday is what Mike Elias envisioned when they acquired him from Oakland a couple off seasons ago. So I mean, they've continued to swing the bats well. That's been evident. They lead the league in home runs. It hasn't necessarily profiled exactly as you thought it would, and still waiting for a couple guys to get going. We'll get to Jackson Holliday in a moment, but even Adley Rutschman, Grand Slam aside, the batting average looks good. The on-base percentage has been fine. He hasn't hit for a lot of power yet, and you're talking about one of your two best players going into the season. So what they've done top to bottom with their lineup has just been very, very impressive. And when you get even decent pitching, which Cole Irvin gave them more than that on Sunday, it adds up to a great chance to win night in, night out. And that's why the Orioles are 14-7. It's why they were able to come away with a series win, even with things not going so well in the opener. And it's not terribly different than what we saw last year. They did the same thing last year where win series, don't get swept. Win series, don't get swept. That formula adds up to really, really good baseball over the course of 6 months. And it's already starting to play out that way for the Orioles here over the first 3.5 weeks of 2024.
Well, you say win two out of three, and you lose the first one. You should be winning the second one. And I'll tell you the thing about the Royals, as we bid them adieu, and I had Jeff Montgomery on last month. Now it's all over with. I mean, it's April 22nd, and you've seen them. But in the case of them, even Saturday, the fact that they didn't quit, they got back in the game. I had buried them, saying you give a seventh spot to Corbin Burns, it should be nighty night. The bullpen, in a general sense, and where it is and where it's going. And look, we'll get to Jackson Holliday, and I say give him another month. Let him go play ball. Leave the kid alone. Let him go get three hits in the middle of the night here this week at some point, and get out of this thing. As we watch Couser, as we see Henderson, as we know what Rutschman was 2 years ago, wasn't even on a team 2 years ago. This wasn't even a thing 2 years ago, right? I mean, that's how crazy this has become, and how quickly. And to your point with the Royals, but seeing the Royals come back, saying, yeah, young team, got some bats, got some potential. Salvador Perez, he's never going to retire, that guy. Well, I was thinking, is Fisk still playing, is what I was thinking, or is Pudge still playing? But for me, with the Royals and the comeback, part of that is indicative of the bullpen. And on any given night, Corbin Burns with a 7-0 lead, and we're still playing ball 2.5 hours later. Like that's unacceptable. I mean, it just is. I want to be able to turn the game off on a Saturday like that and just go do something else for a while. And I would say from the bullpen, we keep talking about the help. And Elias, once every 2 weeks, they have a roster transaction. Some guys come up, and then they get this incredible start from the kid on last week. And then they get an incredible start from a guy that we have been generous in saying is a number five and who wants to be a starting pitcher on Sunday, but at least you see the ceiling of what the starting pitching can be, because I don't know, it's baseball. Next week we'll be complaining about the starting pitching, right? But and maybe Means and Bradish are here by Preakness. I don't know. But let's talk about the pitching and talk about the bullpen, because Saturday provided some histrionics we don't really need to see around here.
Yeah, well, I mean, it goes back to what I said before the season started. If there's an element of this baseball team that I don't love, it's the bullpen. I mean, it's just the truth. And look, Craig Kimbrel's been as good as the Orioles could have possibly imagined so far. And he's been excellent. What, tied Billy Wagner for seventh place all time in saves on Saturday night, even as Colton Cowser accidentally threw the ball into the fountain, which I thought was a hilarious story. But, even Yennier Cano and Danny Coulomb, who are guys that are on the much higher side in terms of the trust factor, they've been a little shaky of late. And that doesn't mean I'm concerned about them specifically. It just speaks to there's not a whole lot that you feel locked down about in that bullpen right now. And I can't sit here and say I'm surprised by that. I mean, I can't sit here and say that.
And they're playing 700 ball while we're talking about this, right?
Sure. Well, yeah. But we still need to talk about it because we
Oh, I
also
know.
know over
When
the
the
course of a
Ravens are
long
9-2, and Lamar threw two picks and got away with it, we talk about it. So, I mean, but that's part of the baseball thing, is things are so sunshine and roses because of the outcome that it's up to you and me to peel back the onion and say, let's not lose three in a row in October again.
Well, I mean, but this is all how it works. And it's not even about October yet. I mean, you got a long baseball season. pitchers are going to get hurt. You know, a pitcher's coming back from injury. We don't know what's going to happen with Kyle Bradish and John Means, right? I mean, the results have kind of been up and down with the rehab starts, which is fine for the moment, but.
But the outcome of playing 700 ball is everything in a bag of donuts from 3 weeks ago from ownership and Cal Ripken and all this cool stuff that's going on. The team's performing, man. And there's a lot of places around the sport where, you know, if they were two games over 500 right now, we'd be saying, what's wrong with the pitching, right? I mean, we would have to say that, right?
Right, right. And look, I'm not. When I mentioned the bullpen, that's not being doom and gloom. It's just talking about an element of the team that does need to tighten up a little bit. And we've talked about this. Again, I'm not surprised by
this.
Mike
Elias has probably talked about this. Right?
Sure, sure. And keep in mind, I mean, you mentioned, you know, Albert Suarez, who's not a kid. He's 34.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Right.
No, kid to me, not to you.
Right. Well, he's still technically a kid to me, even. It shows how old I'm getting. But it's definitely, you look at him or Cole Irvin or, you know, Tyler Wells, who's on the IL right now. But these are guys that, from the moment that they acquired Corbin Burnes, you certainly weren't envisioning being in your rotation. And then we find out the news about Bradish. We find out the news about Means on the first day of spring training. So these guys are in the rotation for now. Look, Albert Suarez, he might become a seventh inning guy for them at some point in the not too distant future. You know, he's going to start against the Angels. You know, he's going to start for the time being. He's earned that. He deserves that. Looking forward to seeing what he does in his second start. Looking forward to seeing what he does after that. But you know, the bullpen is certainly, it's a work in progress, and it was always going to be. Again, when you lose someone like Felix Bautista, who had a historic season last year, as I've written at BaltimorePositive.com multiple times, the Orioles, it was admirable what they did over the final month of the season last year without Felix Bautista. But navigating without your star closer for a month or for 5 weeks, it's a different animal than trying to do it for 6 months.
Well,
right?
That's the reason they went and got Kimbrel right away. I mean,
sure,
they got
sure.
Kimbrel and John Angelo still own the team, you know,
right,
from a financial standpoint.
Sure, but we also said, even if Craig Kimbrel is as great as he could reasonably be, that whatever your projection models would say about him, he wasn't going to be Felix Bautista. So it was always going to be a collective effort. It was a collective effort last year. But long before Bautista got hurt in late August, we were talking about bullpen help at that point. They got Fuji and wasn't enough. But
well, the other thing was they played all those one-run games last year too. You know, so add that on top of having this all-world, all-legendary throwing 103 miles an hour closer. They had a special set of circumstances. Like, they won 101 games. I mean, they've been playing ball here for 75 years. They haven't done that a handful of times, right?
Yeah. So, but you're going to need a strong, deep bullpen over the course of the season, and that's not to say that what we've seen over the last 10 days is, you know, that it's going to be some critical, you know, problem for them that's going to be a downfall. But if you're talking about something that can improve, it's definitely the bullpen, you know, and it's okay saying that. It's fine. And again, they're 14-7, even with a bullpen that has some question marks in it. But, you know, who do you really trust at this point in time? Craig Kimbrel? Great. Yeah, and your Cano, shaky, couple outings here recently, still trust him, right? Danny Coulomb, still trust him, even though he's been a little shaky. But Dylan Tate? You know, I mean, coming back from missing all of last year, it's been really choppy. And, you know, Ramirez has been in the bullpen. Okay, that hasn't gone great. And Keegan Aiken, as well as he pitched the first 2.5 weeks, and I was singing his praises, he's kind of reverted to Keegan Aiken we've seen in the past. I can't say I'm shocked by that. That's typically how it works with guys that are up and down, you know, guys that are on the back end of your roster, so to speak.
He's a relief pitcher for a reason, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that's how
they're all
works.
Failed so, starters.
Yeah, yeah, it's the truth. So, you know, you go through the list, and again, you feel great about Kimbrel. Hopefully, he continues to do what he's done because he's been excellent. And, you know, even the velocity has ticked up a little bit here of late, which that had been, you know, at least a point of interest as it pertained to him over the course of spring training in the first couple weeks of the season. But yeah, if there's something about this team that you're still pointing to, it's, you know, pitching, as it is for so many teams around baseball. When you're talking about the injuries, when you talk about just the lack of depth in general, bullpens are really, you know, bipolar, up and down, however you want to categorize it. Bullpens are like that. So
But all the more reason that if my father came back from the dead to watch my 25th anniversary on Thursday and he said, hey, how are the Orioles doing? I'd say, well, they got a starter named Burns. Yeah, how's he doing? Well, Poppy's 3-0 with a 276. Wow, good April. Hey, who's their number two? Oh, Grayson Rodriguez, big kid, right hand. Reminds me a little bit of Palmer, a little bit of Messina. 3-0 with a 263. Oh, wow. Well, they must be playing good. They must be playing 600 ball, huh? You know, if you're getting that out of the front end of the staff, that's exactly what you and I, if we were driving around, if I ever took you to Yoder's for the fried chicken, no offense to Royal Farms, great fried chicken. Make sure you're voting in the USA Today poll before, I think it's May 3rd, May 4th. They're trying to win this USA Today thing. So I got it. But if you and I were talking, I'll pretend Rofo was in Sarasota. We were pretending to get chicken, and we were saying this is what 1 and 2 would look like, especially in the absence of Bradish, especially in the absence of Means not really being ready to go. That's what you need to do. I mean, that because whatever the prescription is, there's going to be somebody in the bullpen that gives you one like Keegan Aiken did. And there's going to be some Ramirez at the end of the bullpen that you're always shuttling somebody from Norfolk because that's modern baseball.
Yeah. Well, I mean, their number one and number two starters have been excellent and they lead the league in home runs. I mean, that's kind of that's an oversimplification, but that's really what this team has been able to hang its hat on.
And they
on,
even moved the fence back, Pop.
Sure. So, I mean, you know, the lineup has been excellent for the most part. And again, we'll get into Jackson Holliday. But, you know, overall, I mean, when you see what Kowser's done, when you see what Jordan Westberg has continued to do, I mean, those two guys alone, if you told me going into the season that they would be doing what they're doing, which is even though they're hitting seventh and eighth, a lot of days, as they did on Sunday, they're putting up production that is middle of the order production for you. If you told me that alone, I'd say Orioles probably getting off to a pretty decent start just because Colton Kowser was really, really struggled last year. And now he's looking like, you know, I wouldn't say a tent pole best two or three guys on the team that I necessarily think he's going to expect to, or I expect him to continue to be that great. He's not going to continue to put up these kind of numbers, but boy, he's looking like a guy that, you know, we haven't even getting to the point where we're not even talking about Austin
well,
Hayes, you know,
so part of this and going back to Moneyball and going back to the Greek god of walks and guys who see the ball well and the guys that my dad always loved, you know, as players were the guys who hit the ball and guys who put the ball in play. And we talk so much about the swing and miss part of modern baseball and they all kind of have that in their game to some degree. Yeah. You know, you don't walk off the island, as my people would say back in the day as well. But they have a lot of guys who put the ball on the bat on the ball, I should say. And, I mean, Henderson came so close to hitting a home run. And they all know their launch angles, and they talk about it with Kevin Brown, and they all know spin rates, and they all – like, they speak a different language. So if Mr. Rubenstein decides to let me in, I have to learn the new language of the kids and how this goes. But I know a ball player when I see one, and, oh, my God, like, these guys hit the ball, and they're selective at the plate. And then there's Holliday. Do you want to talk? Is this the entree to Holliday or?
I want one last point on what you were just saying. What's been interesting about this team is one, of course, they lead the league in home runs. So we start with that. But what's been interesting, and this is where I think you're going to see things evolve as the year goes on. They haven't walked a whole lot, and a lot of that's been because they've been so productive, swinging the bat and putting it in play and hitting for a lot of power. So I will be interested to see how that's going to go. Because, again, you look at the number of guys they have right now that are slugging. I think they have seven guys in the order right now slugging .481 or better as they concluded the Royals series. That's not going to continue quite at that rate. So that's where I do think you'll see a few more walks take over. But even though they haven't been drawing a ton of walks, you also look at them from a strikeout standpoint. It's not as though they've struck out an extraordinary number of times where that's a major problem until we get to Jackson Holliday. And look,
I was going to say, like, you know, he's got a 2-to-1, a walk to hit ratio.
I mean, we need to parcel this out a little bit because look, he struggled to start. It's not a big surprise. We've talked about this. Gunnar Henderson struggled. Adley Rutschman struggled. Colton Kowser really struggled to the degree that he got set back to the minors last summer. So to sit here and say that I'm shocked that a 20-year-old has struggled would be disingenuous, right? I mean, part of the reason I wanted him on the opening day roster, part of the reason I wanted him in Baltimore sooner rather than later was because of what we're seeing right now. If this is going to happen where he's going to struggle, whether it was going to be in April or June, I'd rather it be in April because he gets it out of the way. And then when you're playing second half, duking it out with the Yankees or whoever for the division title, or duking it out with whoever for the number one seed and home field advantage in the American League, I want this to be behind him. So,
well, he would have blended in a lot more if he would have come up on opening day, for sure.
Yeah, but at the same time, for me, it's not even about being 1 for 30. Okay, so if he were 1 for 30, but the strikeout rate wasn't 50%, let's say it was 35%, 30%, something along those lines, which is still really high, too high, right? But he was putting more balls in play, hitting more balls hard. I'd look at that and say, you know what? He's struggling, but the signs are there to not completely panic. And I'm not saying that any complete panic is warranted right now. However,
has kid ever gone 1 for 30 in his life anywhere at any level at any time? I don't think so. Probably not.
Probably not. Probably not. 1 for 20, yes, because that is baseball. But 1 for 30 with a 50% strikeout rate, you know, that's a little different. So let me be clear. When I'm saying this doesn't mean that I think they should send him down tomorrow. Doesn't mean that I think they should sit him on the bench. But I think we do have to look at this pragmatically speaking and say, he's got to start making more contact much sooner rather than later if this is going to continue right now. This does not mean that I think Jackson Holliday is going to be a bust or is it going to figure it out. I think he absolutely will. But for right now, I do think I keep sending him out there as long as, and this is where you have to lean on Brandon Hyde. This is where you need to lean on your coaching staff, and you want to see a guy that isn't showing signs of his confidence crumbling, right? Look, anyone who's 1 for 30, their confidence can be a little shaken. Even a veteran player, when they're 1 for 30, they're not feeling great about themselves.
I'll tell you this, I'm about to go out selling, you know, Baltimore Positive after the film comes out. If I go 1 for 30, you won't want to wake up and do baseball talk with me in August if I'm 1 for 30 in sales here. You know, like, yeah, I literally in my life, I've been doing this 32 years. I've never been. Once you start putting it into my space and saying, how would you feel about going 1 for 30 and whatever it is that you do, and you're 20 years old and the spotlight's on you and you're supposed to be going to the Hall of Fame. Yeah, I would say it's been a couple, you know, he sort of went home this weekend too, right? Like it was a stink out there because he's from that part of the world and people came and. It's just, this is not what we envisioned 2 weeks ago, for sure. When I was singing Holiday Celebrate, you know?
Well, and that's where, and this is where I will say it on the flip side. I think people that are making the comparisons to how others have struggled, that's well and good. This is extreme, though. I mean, this is extreme, and this is where I am starting to look at this and say, I need to at least start seeing more contact. Right. The results, again, if it were 1 for 30 with many more balls put in play, fewer strikeouts, maybe a couple more walks mixed in, even then I'd be like, look, we're watching what's happening here. He's making contact. He's hitting into some tough luck. That's where I actually was a little heartened. And again, there's only so much sugarcoating you can do when you're 1 for 30, but lined out in the fifth inning on Sunday, hit the ball hard. You know, exit velo was, you know, he hit the ball hard. He walked in the ninth inning. Now, you know, the 3-2 pitch that he took right down the middle in between there, that wasn't great. But it's not as though he's first pitch swinging at a ton of pitches out of the strike zone, looking completely, utterly helpless at the plate in every single at bat. That said, again, when you're striking out in half of your plate appearances, you know, I need to start seeing some growth in that department, that specifically, much sooner rather than later. He can't continue to strike out in half of his plate appearances and for this to go on another month like that. And I don't think it's going to be clear. I wrote it at BaltimorePositive.com. I'd continue starting him as long as I think his confidence is holding up okay, as well as it can when you're 1 for 30. So, you know, for me, see how the rest of this road trip plays out. See how it plays out against Oakland over the weekend. You do have the Yankees.
Dude, when this kid eventually hits, before we move off of him, when this kid eventually hits, it's going to be interesting to see how his teammates rally around him because they've all been through it. right? And they've all been through it together, seeing each other. Couser had to sit at the locker and pack his ish and go home 8 months ago and say, I'm not good enough to be here, after Stowers had it happen and hadn't been back since, right? So it's, you know, there is a blood brother thing that I look at. And by the way, free promotion for Masson, which is like doing a special on the 83 first special in Masson history in 20 years. All, you know, but about $4 billion is my math, driving back from Syracuse over the weekend. You know, went through the hands of the Angelos family from our cable television bill from 2005 till now. And we've got a special on the 83 Orioles. And, you know, what's special about those guys? And I know, and I've been privy enough to hang out in some circles where they've been gathered, and man, you see the brotherhood right away of those guys in that group, because they all did it together. They all came through in this, not Palmer, but the rest of them kind of all came through it together. And that's the kind of thing I see with this team that's different than in 96. And I saw Roberto Alomar was here signing autographs over the weekend. I always loved Robbie. But those guys were bought, you know, the 96 and 97. Yeah, I mean, Cal, fine. Brady was traded from Boston. He wasn't an Oriole farm man, but and Messina was. It was a little more homegrown. Ben McDonald, a little more homegrown. But this is a different level of how the fans come on to this, how fans have gone to Aberdeen, have gone to Bowie, have gone to Delmarva and seen these players play. When one of them fails in this fashion, I would think there's a real competition, as Grayson Rodriguez and Corbin Burns would say, and Burns is the imported guy, but the rest of these guys are really going to rally around him. When he hits that walk-off in August or whenever that is, I think there'll be a different level for him, because this has been hideous, really.
Well, yeah, I mean, it and again, I think 1-for-30, yes, 1-for-30 and 16 strikeouts in his first 32 plate appearances. Yeah, I mean, that's extreme, but everyone who's played baseball at a high level has struggled at some point in time, whether it was going to be in single A, whether it was going to be in double A, whether it was going to be in triple A, whether it's going to be as a rookie, whether it's going to be in your second year. You know, we've seen guys that have been rookie sensations and have the sophomore slump, you know, the proverbial sophomore slump. So it happens at some point in time for everyone. You know, and I think it does help that you have a team that's close. It does help that you have homegrown guys. I mean, even look at some of the leaders on this team. Go back and look at Cedric Mullins back in 2019. Cedric Mullins struggled so badly. He wasn't only sent down. He was sent down and wound up in double A because he struggled at triple A even.
Ryan Ripken talks about that all the time, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's part of it. I don't think it necessarily makes Jackson Holliday feel great in the moment. But look, let's be clear. I still think he's going to be fine. I still think he's going to be everything they expect him to be. But as it stands right now, it is difficult. And I think we are at least getting to, you know, not the next game or two, but we do need to start seeing some growth in terms of him, his timing getting better. You know, he can't keep striking out on half of his plate appearances. You know, I know Ben McDonald mentioned on the Masson telecast over the weekend, he does have a high leg kick, you know, so that doesn't mean he's going to abandon that permanently, but does he need to adjust that for a time, right? And that's where you have two hitting coaches, you know, see what they have to say, or they might just say keep playing, keep plugging along, because it's worked at every level. It's going to work here eventually. And I know Mike Elias did an interview over the weekend of Sirius MLB Network Radio, you know, what talked about it. Some of this is just part of the transition, and he even pointed out, you know, not just talking about Triple A pitching and left-handers at Triple A, but you think about all the injuries that we're seeing around baseball pitching wise. His hypothesis is you're seeing a lesser, you know, a lower amount of major league caliber pitching talent at AAA right now as a result of that. So, you know, basically alluded to the fact that, look, we could send Jackson Holliday back down. He's shown he can hit AAA pitching. So what are you really going to get out of that? And that's why I said, unless you feel like his confidence is really starting to be shaken. And I don't think we're there yet. Certainly don't think we're there yet. But I think the Orioles, to a man, and I think Jackson Holliday would tell you, he's got to start making contact more consistently. He's got to start putting the ball in play more consistently. If he does that, more hits will start to fall, whether it's a screaming line drive that's 102 miles per hour, or whether it's a couple, you know, couple just dunking one in the left center a couple times, a couple broken bat singles, a swinging bunt. You know, if he gets a couple of those, I think he'll start to exhale and start to relax and start hitting and performing much better at the plate.
5 of 45 starts to sound better, 1 of 30, right?
Sure,
so, like,
exactly.
You've got to start
and
somewhere.
Right, and that's where – but I and Brandon Hyde talks about this a lot, and I've heard other coaches say it, but I'm going to mention Brandon Hyde because he's the current manager. You have to go up to the plate not trying to get it all back at once. You have to go up to the plate not trying to get a hit. You go up to the plate trying to have a good at bat, and that means taking pitches that are outside the zone or strikes that you can't do a whole lot with. And to his credit, I think for anyone who go beyond the numbers and you're watching Jackson Holliday plate appearance, he has had plenty of good plate appearances. I also would say I think he's been pitched pretty well overall. I think, you know, that over the first 10 days of his major league career, go back and look at some of the borderline pitches that he took that ended up being strikes or just ended up being really good pitches. I think he's probably hit into a little bit of tough luck. I'm not saying that excuses his overall production right now, but I think if you looked at it plate appearance, you've seen some of that. Point is, he can't let that snowball. You can't get six hits in one plate appearance to try to get your batting average back up to the Mendoza line. I mean, that's just, it's not going to work that way for right now. So he just has to go up there one plate appearance at a time, have a good at bat, put the ball in play, try to hit the ball hard, and go from there. And if he does that, it will start looking better. So again, I am not at a point where I'm saying to bench him or anything like that, but he's got to cut down on the strikeouts, got to start putting the ball in play. Once he starts putting the ball in play more consistently, you're going to start to see more hits fall. Confidence level is going to rise. And then I think he's going to be fine. So, you know, again, I'm not there yet whatsoever with saying send him down. But at the same time, when we're making these comparisons to, you know, other Orioles on the current roster or Cal Ripken or Willie Mays, it's been extreme, right? He's struggling more than some of those scenarios. Again, for me, it's not 1 for 30 as much as it's struck out 16 times in 32 plate appearances over, you know, his first, what, 3-4 series of his major league career. I mean, that has to get better. That has to get better sooner than later. If that gets better sooner than later, the rest of the results will start to come. And I think it's going to happen for him. And I'm more than willing to stick with him for the time being, as long as he's continuing to show me that his confidence isn't crumbling. And look, it's a 20-year-old kid, comes from a good family, 7-time All-Star father in the major leagues. You know, the pedigree should tell you that he should be able to hold up better than your typical 20-year-old.
His makeup is bulldog to get to the majors at 20,
yeah,
right? Like,
exactly.
Period, right?
I mean, that's
he's not
why
a pussycat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Literally.
But that said, there is still a potential breaking point that you at least need to be aware of here. And this is where we say, we go back to Colton Cowser and say, you know what? If Jackson Holliday has to get sent down, that doesn't mean he's not going to come back later this year. That doesn't mean he won't come back next year and be an MVP caliber player. I mean, Colton Cowser has been their best player through the first 3.5 weeks of the season. So again, it shows you this is really difficult to do at this level, and it doesn't always work. You know, it's not always going swimmingly as soon as you get called up. So let's just see it play out a little bit more. Again, want to see him start putting the ball in play more consistently. That's the start. If he can start doing that, I think the rest of it will start to come more quickly.
By the way, so I was doing the countdown to the 25th anniversary. No one listens, everyone hears. It's coming out on Thursday night at 5:08. Enjoy it. Make fun of me. Yell at me. Throw emails my way. But please just watch it and laugh and hear the story of how I found you and how you found me and how we all found each other, because it's really the story of putting all that together. But I was doing the daily countdown, and I had some pictures of people. And I never really had a picture with Mark Belanger, right? So like number 7, I saw 7. And I started to think about him. And I started to think about all the numbers, like Kiko Garcia wore 3 and Bill Ripken wore 3 and Melvin Mora wore 6, and I have a cool picture of Melvin Mora. And so I was trying to come up with all this stuff. And I thought about, like, would there be a place for a Mark Belanger? I'm like, oh, you hide him in a lineup on a team like this that hits the ball, like the 79 team or whatever. And then I thought about him playing for Tommy Lasorda, which was even stranger because him and Dempsey, the whole deal. But I looked at this team, and I looked down as to where they are just 2 weeks into the season, 3 weeks into the season. They're going to have 8 guys that hit 20 home runs on this team, right? I mean, they might have 6 that hit 30, but they're going to have 8 that hit 20 if nobody gets hurt. I mean, and that's with Holiday not hitting like Belanger, literally, right? It's, I began this with saying they really hit the ball, but where you're going to see it is if they stay healthy and they win 90 or 100 games, whatever it'll be, and they get pitching back and they get Means back and Bradish's arm doesn't fall off and they make a trade or two and whatever happens between here and the end of the year, these stats on the back of the bubblegum card at the end of the year, as a team, it's going to look gaudy as hell. And I'm not thinking that Kowser's going to hit 380 or that Westberg's going to hit 330. I mean, just in a general sense, the body of work, because Rutschman hadn't really hit the ball yet. You know, Hayes is like taking a nap. You know, there's like all of these guys that will say, well, Kowser's trended, and you mentioned Westberg. But all the rest of these guys are having sort of run-of-the-mill, rudimentary, all-star caliber years. Two guys at the top of the rotation look like they're going to start the all-star game. Closer has three wins at an ERA of one, and we're waiting for him to blow up one night and not be any good. But, I mean, as far as how we would have scripted this 3 weeks ago, other than Holiday slump, which we spent 10 minutes talking about, this has been a pretty glorious start to the season. And you mentioned sophomore slumps, and I was going to kick a cheap shot at Craig Worthington in here somewhere and say, I'm still waiting for the second year. This team's come back from 101 wins with a manager of the year, with all of the young guns and gunners and all of that, and trying to make room for the Cowsers and the Holidays and new bodies and a new number one ace that they've imported who's pitching for a contract. Yeah, man, this is about as good as it gets. It can be much better than it is.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're 14-7, even with some concerns about the bullpen. And again, when I bring up the bullpen, it's relative, right? It's relative. We got to have something to talk about. I mean, don't want to just sit here for 30 minutes and just
yeah. If they just won 9-1 on Saturday night, we'd have nothing to bitch about here.
Right. I mean, they're playing excellent baseball overall. There's no question about that. But yeah, I mean, they've hit the ball. They've hit the ball. And let's be clear. Let me clarify when you said Adley Rutschman batting .298. He just hasn't hit for power yet, right?
Well, I'm saying he hasn't won three power. Games in a row and had a walk-off and had one of those 7-for-15 with three bombs.
Sure.
I mean, and he's going to do that. He's going to do that. He's going to do that, and he's not going to go 1-for-30 and strike out 15 times.
I mean, you just go down the order right now, just slugging percentage. Gunnar Henderson, .558. Adley Rutschman, .393. That's why I said Adley Rutschman hasn't hit for power yet, even with the grand slam on Friday night. O'Hearn, we barely even mentioned Ryan O'Hearn, who last year came out of nowhere as this cast-off from Kansas City and ended up settling into the middle of their order. He's doing the same thing for them this year. You know, he's looked, you know, he's hitting for power and has been really good for them again. Santander really swinging the bat well after kind of a slow start to the season in that department. Mountcastle swung the bat well and, you know, even drawing some walks and continuing what he did in that department in the second half last year. Cedric Mullins has done it with the glove and the bat here over the last 2 weeks. Kowser, Westberg. And, you know, again, we're waiting for Holiday. By the way, that's another point, to be patient with Jackson Holiday. When you have so many other guys hitting in the lineup right now, as long
you can hide
as he
him.
Is
Belanger, that
not
was my point.
Crumbling confidence-wise. Right, exactly. And you know, we saw him make a couple nice plays defensively. You know, I think his defense, he settled in that department after, a couple of the pop-ups at Fenway, you know, where it looked a little shaky. So, you know, for everything you could point to for this team that might, you could say, okay, well, that could be better, or that guy could be better. The bullpen, you know, they're 14-7. They've played really, really well. And by the way, we haven't even mentioned it. We will, because they'll be playing them here in Baltimore in the not too distant future. They've been there right with the Yankees, who got off to a really good start, although they've come back to earth a little bit here recently. But yeah, the AL East, it's not easy. Go look at the AL East compared to the AL West, for example. And you could see how stout the competition is.
Hold
not
on
a big
Yankees
surprise.
At Orioles, 20, not that's next week. We got a big series in April. Look at that, Luke Jones.
As big as it can be in April, right? Exactly. I mean, it's
look. Let me sell it. I'm working for the Rubenstein family. Get down. Get your seats early. You know it's gonna be a tough ticket. Let me do all that. Let me do all that.
But the point was, I mean, you've got an AL East.
Ground gasolines.
You've got an AL East with every team with a winning record at the conclusion of the weekend. So it's not easy. But the Orioles are doing the job, and they're playing .667 ball. As we're approaching the final week of April, what more can you ask? I mean, it's that things are, as I continue to say, we'll continue to say, it's a good time to be an Orioles fan, that's for sure.
He's Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. I am Nestor. We together are WNST Baltimore Positive. We're going to be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out of the road twice this week. We're going to be in Hampstead, Carroll County at Green Mountain Bowl, eating the Green Mountain Station Crab Cake, I promise you, at 4 p.m. We'll have some Pac-Man Scratch offs from the Maryland Lottery, our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare sending us out on the road again on Friday. We'll be live at Fadley's from 2 until 5. Luke will be joining us before the Oakland Athletics come to town, and that's a weird media weekend because, like, we have the draft going on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We have baseball Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We have one credential reporter for two teams, so we'll be here locked down. But the movie release is on Thursday night, and Luke is prominently featured in the from the 2009 portion till now. But if you've ever been a part of anything I've ever done at any point in my life, from knowing me as a kid, as Ekman would say, right on up through, hey, I found you Baltimore Positive in this weird thing you did with Sheila Dixon last week, or Shannon Sneed. Whatever it is, I hope you find us here this week and you find the film. No one listens, everyone hears. It is a retrospective telling our story after 25 years at WNST and 40 years of doing media around here, and now almost 33 years of doing this. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. My little Pac-Man promotion. We never stop talking Baltimore. Positive. More baseball ahead.